Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is honored to be presented again this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. For more than 48 years, the Townsend family of dealerships has been a locally owned company built on service and connection with its customers. And their experienced team can walk you through the car buying process side by side from test drive to service oil changes and beyond. Townsend goes through a rigorous vetting process to make sure that every pre-owned vehicle adheres to quality standards. And right now, there's plenty on the lot to choose from in various makes and models. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Automotive salutes local entrepreneurs, from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. Vishwesh Bhatt has been part of Chef John Currence's City Grocery Restaurant Group in Oxford, Mississippi, since 1997. He started off as a prep cook at City Grocery and worked his way up to executive chef at Snack Bar, where he has developed a menu that intertwines both Southern and subcontinental foodways. His new cookbook, I Am From Here, Stories and Recipes from a Southern Chef, celebrates and explores this intertwining of cultures through his own unique personal lens. And it was masterfully photographed by past guest Angie Mosier. Vish was Southern Living's 2019 Southerner of the Year, and that same year won James Beard Foundation Best Chef South. I wanted to catch up with him on his debut week before it took months for our paths to cross, but as is sometimes the case in the life of an independent podcast, my fancy remote recording equipment went wonky because of our respective locations, so we resorted to an old-fashioned phone call. It was nevertheless a wonderful conversation, as you'll soon hear.
Vish, welcome to the Southern Fork.
Hey, thanks for having me, Stephanie. How have you been?
I've been great. I'm so sad that I'm not able to sit across from you in person, and we have a cocktail or a beer and chat, but I appreciate your chatting from the beginnings, the very exciting beginnings of your book tour. You're still in Oxford, though, right?
I am still in Oxford, yes.
Yeah. So how was your launch party?
It was awesome. It was great to have, you know, the town turned out. You know, it's a really nice feeling when all your friends that, you know, people that you've been feeding for a while just all show up and support you. I mean, that is why, you know, I call Oxford home, and I love being here.
Well, I've been reading and doing my research. You've been there for 30 years, right?
Yes.
I'd like to start this conversation by referencing John Currence's foreword. He said some really wonderful things, and he said that you two spend more time together than a lot of couples in the foreword.
that is true. We have, of course, lately he's been very busy opening Big Bad Breakfasts, yes, across the country. So yes. I haven't seen him much, but yes. Yeah.
They're multiplying for sure.
Yes.
But he mentioned that, you know, when you first came into City Grocery in the 90s, you were sitting and you would take time and really eat and smell and really just interact with the food a lot. And he said that you eventually told him that you were fascinated with the rest stuff. And I wanted to see if you could elaborate on that. If you could explain what it was about that restaurant that captured your imagination.
I mean, it was the flavors, right? I mean, because, you know, until I started eating at City Grocery, you know, most, you know, quote unquote American food I had had was not as well seasoned, right? I mean, it was salt and pepper and maybe some herbs, but, you know, with John's New Orleans influences, you know, explosion of flavors happening in the dishes he was cooking. That was the one thing that drew me to it. Second thing is that the attention to detail to, you know, not just the food, but to service, you know, you were made to feel special the second you walked in. And, you know, people remembered what you liked or what you didn't like. It was a very, very special place to go in to eat.
And it was a different place, you know,
yes.
That was a different time in Oxford. Oxford is now on the map culturally for sure.
Right.
And it was a lot more sleepy back then. I think, I talked to Tim, at Johnny's Homewood and said, I think he was cooking for me. I was there in 97. So, I mean, I remember what those days looked like in Oxford, but I am so thrilled to see this book. I'm so thrilled to hold it in my hand, and already I've cooked from it. And what I loved about it was first feeling a connection to it because I, of course, like a lot of people in the South, in the culinary community, feel like I know you at least a little bit and everyone's super excited about this. But two, I just love the title. And I'm sure you're getting that comment a lot.
Yeah.
You know, when you say that you embrace being a Southerner, and I know you wrote that in your introduction, would you mind just giving us a short recap of that?
Sure. I mean, you know, so I immigrated to this country. You know, I came here and, you know, chose to be here, be where I am. I mean, you know, once I started cooking for a living and I'd done this for a while, I could have done this anywhere, but I chose to be here. I wanted to be here. I knew what was happening in Oxford was special and I wanted to be a part of it. And so I made my choice to, you know, put roots down in Mississippi, buy a house here, you know, been here, pay taxes here, all that stuff. I've been part of this community. It matters to me what happens in this community and how we grow together. And so, you know, when I get this question of, you know, where are you from? My answer is always, I am from Oxford. And unfortunately, a lot of times then that answer is then followed up by, no, where are you really from? So I have to say that, like, no, I'm from Oxford. You know, I am from here. This is my home. This is where I made my home. Just because I don't fit your, you know, stereotype of what a Southerner should look like, you know, that doesn't stop me from being one. This is where I am, and this is where I work. This is where I live. This is the place that has made me who I am, and I'm going to stake my claim and plant my flag and say that I'm from here.
I think that some of the best cooking comes from that very personal place, right? Of that unique history of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we delve into it, a lot of people have multiple ethnicities in their family, or they have influences, or they spent time in a different place. And so that cooking comes from a very, very personal place. And you divided this cookbook into the ingredients, and I love that because I'm familiar with Indian cooking. It's part of my job as a food writer. Mm-hmm. And I like to cook Indian at home. I should say Indian-ish home. But I was taken aback with how many even though I knew like eggplant and sweet potato and okra and a few other things were commonalities, ingredient commonalities, I was taken aback by the number of them that were.
Yeah. And that, I mean, the list in the cookbook is just the beginning. I mean, there are a lot more that, you know, foods that connect us and history that connects the American South to India. We tend to forget. I mean, just this really quick history lesson that, you know, Indians came here, folks from the Indian subcontinent were here as early as the 1650s in the Virginia colonies because they were brought as indentured servants to work on the estates that the new colonists were setting up. And we also, you know, have to remember that the new colony was being built and financed by the money that was made by the British East India Company in India. So one British colony was financing the founding and building of the site. So that is a very old connection, and we tend to forget it. That population of people being brought from India was no longer needed when America decided that it was going to, you know, engage in owning human beings, and that whole tragic history started. Then having servants that you even had to sort of, you know, at least pretend to pay, that need went away. So there weren't as many Indians. And the ones that were here either got assimilated into either the African-American population or, you know, were sent off to the colonies in the Caribbean or to, you know, work the railroad in Central America or whatever. And then they sort of just, you know, slowly disappeared.
Right, but we have little remnants. I think, and I have to make a reference to Faulkner because you are sitting in Oxford, and I know you're used to it. But the past is not that far away. It's not even past, you know.
Correct.
And all of this comes through in our food and our culture, even if we don't personally remember it. It shows up. You know, talk about your mom being a celebrated cook. And I know when she was cooking in Oxford, it was a different time and place. It was before Amazon or Spicewalla or, you know, a lot of really the Food Network. And I was wondering, did she have, and then subsequently you, have trouble sourcing ingredients when you were wanting them?
Yes and no. So the spices were difficult, right? I mean, but, you know, Memphis is not very far. And so, you know, we would make a weekly or twice monthly jaunt up to Memphis to get the spices and such things.
A cooler with barbecue on the way home.
Right. Yeah, sure. not for my mom. But anyway, but as you know, as I say in the book, and as I've always said, the produce was already here, right? Mm-hmm. The peas and beans and the tomatoes and okra and all that stuff was already here. And so all you needed is some spices, and that was, you know, that was it.
If people are interested in cooking from this book, I know like building a spice pantry is a serious thing, you know, for different cultures. And you talk about rice being a very important base. What are some of the two or three spices or spice blends that you would suggest a home cook really invest in? To get started?
So I think, you know, three things. I think turmeric, cumin, and coriander. And I say that because I'm assuming that people will have black pepper and cayenne pepper available. So I think those three. And then from there, you know, once you have those, you can then start thinking about a garam masala, or you can, you know, start thinking about, you know, things like asafoetida and Kashmiri chili and curry leaves. But start with cumin, coriander, you know, and maybe mustard seeds, brown mustard seeds. I think those are the, and turmeric, those four.
And I know so many chefs say that toasting spices is really a requirement, but I've never had anybody talk about it on the Southern Fork. And as I was making one of the recipes the other night, it was the first step. So
right.
Why do we not need to skip this?
The biggest thing is because first use whole spices, don't buy already pre-ground stuff. So when you toast stuff, it kind of wakes up the spices, the essential oils, it kind of brings out the flavor. So you definitely want to do that and just lightly toast them, and until they get really fragrant, and you'll know that's happening because you'll be able to smell it. Then they're at their sort of optimal flavor level, and you can go ahead and start the next step.
And the essential oils are the exact reason why you don't want to buy pre-ground, because
it dissipates, right? Yeah. Exactly.
And that's why that spice rack in my mom's house from the 70s probably shouldn't be used.
No, I mean, you can put all those spices in something, but it's not going to taste like anything,
right.
It's
right.
Yeah.
And when I started really cooking, beyond just, making dishes and, for food and sustenance, I was amazed. Best cooking has a lot of flavor, has a lot of spices and a lot of layered. In the cookbook, you talk about charring things and you talk about, toasting things, and all these that's a lot of chemistry reactions.
But all cooking is chemistry.
Right, which is why I like it. I'm a nerd. And your dad was a physicist, so maybe a little bit of that nerdiness rubbed off on you too, right?
Maybe, yeah.
Did you, when you train chefs at Snack Bar and you get a new chef in the kitchen to work and get them into the Snack Bar system, do you have any special things that you feel like usually trip them up, or things that you're really keyed on as far as cooking?
The first thing people have to learn is that don't be afraid of cooking. I mean, it's not that difficult if you pay just a little bit of attention. So, we start there. It's like, I know this is something you think it's very new and it's scary looking, but let's just, put that aside and just start from the very beginning. So we start them off as like, all right, let's just talk about all the ingredients. Make sure you know what everything is, and where it lives. So, get yourself comfortable in the space you're going to be. And after that, it's a matter of, well, here's a recipe. Let's go ahead and, start making it. And the thing, about Oxford is, we're not a big town, so we don't have a supply of people that are professional cooks. So, what people are coming in are, students or, we're working part time. Some of them may have some, kitchen experience, just, like I did when I started first cooking, working for beer money kind of thing. But they, most of them are not thinking of cooking as a career. But because they choose to work in the kitchen, they have already made that choice that this is something I want to do, right? And so that's a huge plus, because otherwise they would have just said, I'll be a waiter, or I'll go, work at the bookstore or whatever, But by choosing to work in the kitchen, they've already sort of, told me that they're interested. So that helps to start. Mm-hmm. And then we start with conversation that I'd like to have with folks is like, hey, what did you grow up eating? What are some of your favorite foods? Just let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. And then talk about those flavors, or talk about, you like bolognese. Okay, well, let's talk about, spaghetti and bolognese and, how that is made and how those layers of flavor work, like slowly cooking the onions and making sure you don't have the raw onion flavor and this, that, the other. And then sort of just go from there to, talk about the spices and then say, okay, maybe you think these flavors are really strange, but, you eat tacos and so you have actually tasted this stuff. This is just a different ratio, and it most of the time that works. Sometimes I get the deer in the headlight look, and we kind of work through it. The good thing is that I've learned from my parents was patience.
Yeah, that segues into something else I was thinking about when I was flipping through the book, and I think a good example of that really is the peanut pesto, which is a linguistic shift. It's really not pesto, but you're changing that. You're meeting the diner halfway in the situation like that. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about meeting the cook halfway, teaching them. And, there are other chefs to really chafe at something like that. It feels very uncomfortable to them to change words or to have to explain, you know, when French cooking is, you know, the standard. And can you talk a little bit about that and why that's something that you choose to do?
Yeah, I mean, because simply because I want people to cook. I mean, I don't want people to get, you know, lost in names and such things. I mean, because there are parallels. I mean, you know, that particular recipe is made like a pesto. I mean, that is, mm-hmm. you know, just because it's called a chutney where I grew up, and most people here have a notion of a chutney as being sort of, you know, this fruit preserve with spices.
Right.
Doesn't, so why do I want to, you know, have this argument and fight this fight when it's clearly like a pesto and we just call it that? And
right.
then of course it'll also make more sense to somebody who hasn't seen it being made. You know, this is something they're new with, but they do understand pesto. So if you understand that, then you understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have mm-hmm. a problem with, you know. And the other thing is, I don't know how to cook Indian food, right? I left when I was a teenager. I don't really know a lot about Indian food other than maybe, you know, five or six dishes that I grew up with that were sort of a constant in our household. I know how to cook those. And I would probably not change names on those. Right, because
mm-hmm.
I'm really attached to them. But everything else I cook is not really Indian food. It may have some flavors that remind me of my childhood, but that's simply because I like those flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so far, most people that have come in to eat at Snack Bar have also enjoyed those flavors, so I keep doing it.
right. And that was an adventurous thing to move from cooking someone else's food to cooking your own food. Where you're trying to cook from that place that is very you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there any dish that really personifies you that is the most you?
In the cookbook?
Yeah.
I mean, the okra chaat is, you know, clearly sort of that one dish that sort of put Snack Bar on the map. So I would say that one.
The first time I had that.
I would say
back in the local palate days, and then we were
right.
all like, whoa, we have to eat more of that. Yes.
Right. So I would say that one clearly, and then the stuffed baby eggplant, I think is one that stands out to me as being, you know, sort of a dish that I'm very partial to. I think the fried catfish, the Punjabi style fried catfish. I mean, it's, you know, I borrowed ideas from folks like Manit on that mm-hmm. dish, but still, I think that's one that people should try. You know, people that do fried fish should definitely try that one.
Yeah, especially if you can find good catfish. Well, I have to imagine that writing this book, number one, it's huge and beautifully photographed by Angie. And it is,
yeah.
Angie is such an amazing photographer because
mm-hmm.
Because she actually is capturing your style. It looks like you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but also, I mean, Angie, you know, and when Angie photographs stuff, I mean, she's one of those people that has a deep appreciation of food. She's
yeah.
a great cook. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, she knows the amount of work goes into writing a recipe and, you know, making something. And so she does appreciate that. And that clearly shows when she photographs things. She's just freaking brilliant. So
she is brilliant, and lots of fun too, as we both know. But
yeah.
I have to imagine that it felt some kind of way, some kind of big way, to hold that book in your hands after a long process.
I didn't think we would ever get here, you know, and we did, and then of course, you know, we had the scare when. Mason's book was, you know, when,
yeah.
you know, fell, the container fell off, and I was like, oh boy, here we go, you know, you know, that's something one never thinks about. And it's like, now I got to worry about that. And then,
yeah.
you know, and then the publisher said, hey, we're going to move the pub date from, you know, August 2nd to August 16th. And I was like, why, you know, let's just go ahead and put it out. It's ready. He's like, no, just trust us. You know, we've done this before. I was getting a little antsy and probably on their nerves by end of June, because I had done, you know, everything I had to do was done and everything was out of my hands, and I'd seen the galley, and I was like, okay, what are we waiting for now? You know, just let's go. Yes.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, what is making you hungry? What are you? What's percolating next? Are you feeling another book?
I mean, definitely have. I have an idea of a book. I think that would be kind of fun. But it's not quite. You know, I'm not quite ready to share the idea yet. It's coming very soon. I mean, and then we'll see how, you know, if anybody likes it, the idea, and then we'll decide if, you know, what to do about it. But I mean, what's making me hungry right now? I mean, there's so many young people doing all kinds of really fun stuff right now. And, you know, it's not, you know, sort of the fancy, toughy restaurants anymore. It's more casual. It's a lot more approachable. It's a lot more ingredient driven. So I'm digging that, you know, and I mean, as much as I like going into a fancy restaurant, you know, white tablecloth and, you know, kind of eat that sort of food, I really enjoy the sandwich shops and the taco shops and the, you know, like the, hey, you know, all we do is we have, you know, 16 seats and we have these four things on the menu and that's it. You know, I love that.
It's relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I can, especially if you're like us, you're just like, great, I'll take all four. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're done. People need to order more at restaurants, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is one aspect of your job as a chef that really meshes like a puzzle piece with an aspect of your natural personality?
I think it's the part about, you know, the teaching part. I come from a long line of academics and teachers, you know, in my family. And so just having watched, you know, my dad and my aunts and uncles and cousins, you know, who teach for a living, kind of do that, you know, that to show somebody, you know, this thing, you know, the notion that I'm giving somebody a skill that will be useful to them, whether they decide to pursue this, you know, as a career or not. At least they will know some basics that they can either use at home or, you know, if they needed to go work in a kitchen for, you know, a part-time job or something, that I'm giving somebody a skill set. I mean, that's a great feeling.
It is. And I think if, you know, there is a great feeling of independence and being able to cook a few dishes for yourself.
Yep.
Just to, you know that, like, if you're given an egg, you can do something with it.
Yep.
You're not just like, oh my goodness, what is this?
Right.
So what is, it's a quick fire question, but what is something keeping you up at night?
The housing, you know, the price of living in Oxford.
Yeah. It's skyrocketed.
Yeah.
Like so many other places in the South. Mm-hmm. And really countrywide, but I have experienced it a lot in the South, and in Charleston, you know, it's insane.
Yep.
Let's just be real about that. Okay. So this is a dream meal scenario, Vish. Even though we all often ask each other death meal scenarios, right? I don't believe in the death penalty. So I used to ask the death row scenario meal, and then I was like, well, I don't want to keep perpetuating that. So instead, I would like to build you a magic picnic basket. So in this picnic basket, I'd love to bring you some foods that bring you life. I can time travel. I can go back in time to ask anybody to make one more bite. I can source, and I can cook a little bit. So I'd love to bring you some of your favorite things. What can I put in the basket?
Ooh, Leah Chase's gumbo.
Love it.
Ashley Christensen's mac and cheese. Popeye's fried chicken.
Popeye's. Spicy?
Yes, always.
Yeah, always.
What else? I mean, there's so many things, right? Congee that John Currens made about a month ago. I think that was sort of spectacular. You know, that I wish I could have more of it. Chaat from, you know, from this one chaat place called Swati Snacks in Ahmedabad, where I grew up. I think that's a pretty good basket.
That's a pretty
beverage.
Good basket. Yeah.
Yeah. Beverage. Huh. I don't have an attachment to one particular, but, you know, if I had to have one, then a sweet lime soda, which, you know, is one of these things that I grew up with, where it's lime juice, that has a little bit of sweetness, you know, lime juice, some sugar, but it also has a little bit of salt and pepper in it. So it's kind of sweet and it's tangy and it's salty and peppery all at once. It has
and
a little
refreshing.
Bit of fresh mint. Yeah, it has a little bit of fresh mint in it. It's great.
That sounds awesome. Well, especially since it's 14 million degrees where I am today.
Right, exactly.
Well, if people want to learn more about I Am From Here and Snack Bar and Chef Bish and all of his amazing cooking, and go to thesouthernfork.com. I am going to have links there as well as images so you can see the face behind the voice. If you like what you hear, so many people that he mentioned and people that I mentioned, I have had episodes with, and you can dive into the archives to access those. So I hope you'll take the time to do that. And meanwhile, take the time to check out this book. I've already made the okra, corn, and tomato salad. So
thank you.
I'm excited to cook more from it. Peanut pesto, I believe, is going to be next. It might just hang out in my fridge for a while.
I'm going to tell you a secret. That peanut pesto on some white bread, little Duke's mayonnaise on the other side, and some really nice tomatoes with the little salt and pepper, you're going to love it.
Oh, I'm trying that this weekend. Thank you. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you for having me on. And let's have a drink soon.
Hello, and welcome to Talking With My Mouthful. I really want to reiterate a point that Vish mentioned when he was discussing how he really works with the new chefs, the new cooks in the snack bar kitchen. And that's the idea that if they have chosen to be in the kitchen, then the work is already halfway done. I love that idea because if we sit and we think about choosing to be in the kitchen, that makes it a lot more fun than having to be in the kitchen. I hear a lot of people talk about going to the grocery store as a chore. They want to get it done. They want to get everything at one place. I hear that people want to cook and they do these huge prep days for the week so they don't have to cook in the evenings. And I completely understand that I am an unusual person with an unusual schedule, and that might work for all of the aforementioned folks. I think it is fun to go to the grocery store because I care about food and I'm not just buying the same thing every week. I'm always fascinated to go on a different aisle or a different store to see what is there. But it can be fun, and that fun, that relaxation can help with execution. It can help with creativity. So just remember that if you choose to be in the kitchen, that idea that you're committing to the choice to try something new, give yourself a break. You're trying something new. You're practicing. And if anybody knows it's me, cooking is a lifelong practice and I'm just beginning. I hope Vish and I have inspired you to cook something this weekend. And if you do, please tag me on social media and tell me about it. I love to see all of the posts. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll be here next week.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations. But in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?